Welcome back to the Film Experience. It's Nathaniel. I'm here again with Katie Rich, Nick Davis, and Joe Reed to talk the Spirit Award nominations. But first, a little morning after small talk.
So, Nick, for the record, college football was great last night, and it was totally worth watching. And
I
I'm so bad I couldn't have been there and watched that with you.
It
that
was
looked
ridiculous.
Amazing.
I was causing
I
a
have
big
proxy
scene.
Auburn loyalties. I don't know
Oh,
if that's a
really?
problem to say that. So
No, I think I that the end of that game was so amazing. I feel like everyone should be an Auburn fan.
You guys, when people were talking about that, I honestly thought somebody had dyed their hair famous. I totally did. I had no idea what people were
you
talking
just
about.
Went gayer. Like, there was like a Richter scale of gay that just happened right there.
If I were to make
You're
a
so
guess,
close to
like,
autumn sunrise right now.
That would be like my joke about what you would think.
No, but that was actually what I thought. And then, but then I kept hearing Alabama with it, and I'm like, Alabama. Like I couldn't figure out what people were talking
it's
about.
A, it's
like,
a remake
Crimson
of
Tide. Her name is Amber Waves, people.
a remake of Sweet Home Alabama in which the main character has red hair. It'd be a dramatic.
Oh my
Everybody
god!
About it.
Yeah, are we on? Like
we are. Yeah.
Oh,
so we're back. The Film Experience Podcast. This is Nathaniel, and I'm here with Nick.
My first website was with Steven Spielberg, and he told me to just, you know, give myself over to the web.
And, Katie?
Oh, man, I was so not prepared with a quip. I got nothing.
Well, Katie, can I just say, you worked that Cinema Blend girl. You did it. You did it.
Nick will be doing Oprah this whole podcast.
Yes!
And, Joe.
I just feel like podcasters should be there to support other podcasters more.
And low resolution, you wrote. I have it here on my... Oh.
You're the guest at every dinner party.
For
you should
a small
be the guest
fee.
At every dinner party. Oh my god, that... Okay, can we segue into that very, very briefly? Because balance
can,
of that...
Can that be discussed briefly, though?
Well... Maybe not. I don't know. I thought Oprah threw the balance off of that conversation like crazy. It just did not seem like anybody could have a normal conversation with her in the room.
Well, I mean, if they didn't have moderators, I think she would have been.
Oh yeah, she was
a
sort
great
of like
addition
a third moderator.
Because she does keep it going, like,
and she at least has those instincts to like.
Yeah,
she
knows
sort of
if the conversation is dying or if you know.
Well, and I liked that they all, like, got the message from last year, and they were like, fuck this. They just started asking each other questions they wanted to know. Like, that was
yeah.
great. Yeah. And plus,
but
it's not like
you
can derail Emma Thompson. Like, she won anyway. Like, I see what you're doing over there, but I got this, Oprah.
But then you've got Julia being like, so, Oprah, you never went into acting because God needed you to serve humanity from a different perch. And it was just sort of like, oh, maybe it's more of a Julia. But there's just sort of like there's a level of fame with Oprah there that like there's those conversations are always the best when they're always sort of talking on the same level, and it's just impossible to do that with
yeah.
Oprah in the room.
There's so much back padding in Hollywood though, it's a wonder any massage therapist can find work.
That's very true. Well done.
I'm just uncomfortable talking about things like Julia problems and actress problems. Like, what are you guys doing?
Well, which one of the
We're changing our mandate now, it's just actors now. We just like actors.
I did love that Emma punctured the whole thing with the sacrifices. Now that's a personal sacrifice about her hair.
And the thing about how important it is for some women to not have children. Some people not have children, but especially some women. Like, yeah.
I loved that.
It was an unexpected comment, but I loved it too.
And Nathaniel, we are all looking at you. We have so many questions for you. You are just enchanting over there.
It's my breakout year. So, oh, I'm dying to talk about American Hustle, but I'm not allowed to embargo.
Oh,
I just saw
you're
it.
You're a tease.
I was supposed to have seen it, and then I got the screening time wrong, and, and now I have to wait like 3 days, which is the stupidest thing to complain about, but
right.
Everyone has me so excited for it.
Yeah, so moving on. Sorry for the teaser.
You're not sorry. Nobody.
Well, since I'm coming late to Wolf of Wall Street, I have to be excited about coming too early to something.
You're not coming late to Wolf of Wall Street to anybody in this room, though.
No, I know, but it's also screening pretty heavily on Monday, and I can't go on Monday either.
Oh, I didn't get invited to any of those screenings, so enjoy what you got.
Well, I won't be able to is the problem.
Just imagine Leo DiCaprio throwing money at lots of things.
Yeah.
Being like The Great Gatsby.
Exactly. Yeah, just watch The Great Gatsby again.
It's a meme.
watch just the party scene of The Great Gatsby. It seems basically same thing.
Over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's just with more iPhones.
It's a
so
meme.
Where was The Great Gatsby on the Independent Spirit Awards nomination?
Aha! Segue!
I was very disappointed.
We keep having these, like, fake-out segues, but then we don't actually go there.
We could.
Let's talk about Spirit Awards while we're here.
Okay.
So, as everyone knows, you have to be under a $25 million budget to qualify. But not that movies come out with their budget, like, glaring at us, so we don't always know. But for
your budget is showing.
And haven't there been some fudging?
Yes, there has been some fudging of that. But then other times you'd think something would be, you know, you think of it as sort of like an indie, like Out of the Furnace, for example. But its budget is too high, so it didn't qualify. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so Silver Linings, I feel like, was a smidge above the budget cutoff last year. And Harvey does what Harvey does and sort of like snuck it, which is kind of what I was thinking that he was going to do with The Butler and or August Osage County this year. So I was, for as much as this sort of set of nominations is a lot of movies that have gotten a lot of attention already, I feel like it could have been a lot more non-indie.
I do always question the whole organization, though. Like, if you want to highlight independent filmmaking, you should make these things stricter, because imagine, like, how interesting the nominees could be if they were strict about these things and said under $20 million or something. And then you wouldn't have all these, like, it's weird to watch the Spirit Awards and not have people, like, weird, like, Cate Blanchett's gonna win. You know, it's like, those things are, like, weird to me.
The thing is, though, is you can push the line, and there's always going to be something that's brushing up right up against that line. You know what I mean? So you push the line down to $15 million, and there's still going to be some things that, because I think we're in an environment now where people make movies for, you know, their pocketbook, and people make movies for their art. And if Cate Blanchett wants to make a $5 million movie, she still isn't an actress that needs the attention. Do you know what I mean? She's still going to end up being whatever movie she's in is going to be a movie that gets distribution and gets attention and gets recognition. And so, I mean, I totally get the thing of, like, why do we have to have an Independent Spirit Awards with, like, Alexander Payne and the Coens, who have moved so far beyond.
Yeah, I mean, Alexander Payne, his like, average gross now is something like 75, 80 million when his movies comes out. So it just, like, it just seems odd to me that that's the conversation, whereas, like, the nominations for, you know, whenever the nominations come out, I always look immediately at Best First Feature and the John Cassavetes Award.
Yeah. Because those are where the interesting people are.
Well, and those are where I think that they should be focusing, but you'll notice the coverage is never on those things because their limits to what qualifies are so broad. So, like, nobody ever even pays attention to those things outside of maybe the tent, you know? But that's what they should, that should be their mission statement, basically.
I haven't done this yet, but I imagine if you went and looked back at the Cassavetes Awards from the last few years, you would see a lot of people who were making their way up in the years after that. There has to be some more industry attention to that, just because that's putting you on some kind of spotlight, even if it's a smaller one than, you know, best actress.
Well, but I mean, like, take the John Cassavetes example. So we've got nominees Computer Chess, Crystal Fairy, Museum Hours, Pit Stop, and This Is Martin Bonner. I've only seen two of those, but I've heard interesting things about all five, you know? So, like, if the coverage was about those, I would be, you know, potentially those would be easier to see and more people would be talking about them. I'm dreaming.
I feel like it's a classic sort of push-pull, though, where the more high-profile nominees will get wider attention for the entire show. And then, so somebody maybe tunes in to the Spirit Awards to see Matthew McConaughey and Cate Blanchett, and then they end up sort of, you know, being exposed to all of these other movies by watching that whole show. I feel like it's a tough mandate for something like the Spirit Awards, where if you are so small and so restrictive, you end up with a set of nominees that's fantastic for us, but maybe gets, you know, that much less attention overall. I think there is sort of they're aiming for a middle ground that I don't see as quite so sinister, just as they're trying to please a few different audiences at once.
Yeah, and I mean, they're still pulling off weird surprises. Like, you have next to Cate Blanchett, Gabby Hoffman in this movie that made $10 and is really interesting. And, you know, even the supporting female category has this movie, Go for Sisters, I'd never heard of before. Like, she'll get beaten by Lupita Nyong'o or someone, but the fact that she's in there, that gets someone to look up what that film is.
Yeah, which is coming to Chicago in 2 weeks. Oh.
And it's open here in New York right now, apparently.
It's John Sayles. I had no idea.
Grateful that, like, Fruitvale Station kind of had its big moment at Sundance, and then it just got consistently overshadowed by everything else the Weinstein Company had, but this is its moment. This is the awards that Fruitvale Station can really shine at, and I'm grateful that it can do that while Harvey then puts all his money behind August Osage County.
Right. And Melanie Diaz got nominated, and I was...
Yeah.
When they said that Octavia Spencer was one of the nomination readers, I was sort of... Because I was like, Melanie Diaz is going to get in here, and Octavia Spencer maybe at the Oscars. And then I saw that, and I was just like, oh, I made the wrong call. But it turns out I didn't. So, like... And Melanie Diaz, I think, is so wonderful in that movie.
I think
she got the recognition.
I think she's the MVP, actually.
Yeah?
I think that could be such a stock character, and I think she's playing different angles against what's actually on the page sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or bringing things to it that you might not have considered about that relationship. Anyway, I thought she was very good in it. I mean, she's very regularly good, but she's in all these tiny movies, and I keep hoping that she'll get some sort of bigger roles coming.
Have any of you guys seen Afternoon Delight? I hated it so much at Sundance, and I am so baffled by its continued... I mean, it won... I think Best Director at Sundance, and it's here for Best First Screenplay. Yeah. Best First Screenplay. I'm so baffled by this movie. I don't even want to tell people to see it because I didn't like it, but now I want you guys to see it so we can talk about it.
Didn't that make Quentin Tarantino's top 10 list?
Yes, it did! It's like, this movie just haunts me. Like, have you ever had one of those? I mean, this happens like every Oscar year. There's like that one thing
you can't click
with. But this is such a... I feel bad that this is my one, because it's a small movie. It's not hurting anybody, but it's driving me crazy.
My small movie that's driving me crazy this year is Upstream Color.
Oh, yeah, that one's gonna...
I just disliked it. And it's not that I have anything against that filmmaker, because I loved Primer, but it just rubbed me every wrong way.
Yeah, I could never quite get on board with Upstream Color, but I also feel like... The inescapability of Afternoon Delight and Upstream Color sort of is kind of music. You know what I mean? It's just like, this is the only place they're going to show up in the entire award season.
And we're like, damn them.
And you're just like, I'm being inundated. Go away.
Well, there's also
this idea of like Upstream Color and Afternoon Delight as like Michael Myers. Like, they just keep showing up. And
they're like the weirdest pair you could possibly imagine. Yeah, they have basically nothing to do with each other.
Don't go to sleep. Upstream Color will get you.
Well, isn't that the message of the movie? Get abducted.
I guess experiment in that movie.
Yeah, I tried twice. I'm super excited. I keep belaboring this on Twitter, but I'm super excited about Blue Caprice.
Yeah,
which I think it's really great, and it's still available on Amazon Instant, so super easy for all kinds of people to see it.
Yeah. I wish it had gotten a couple of acting nominees, but...
Is that the one about the sniper?
The sniper, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Correct.
That movie is very... it's way more experimental than I think I was expecting when I saw it at Sundance.
Yeah.
And for something to make it in the indie spirits. I'm really... I don't think I connected with it as much as a lot of people did, but I'm really glad that something that daring is getting those kind of headway.
Yeah.
It's a shame that Best Male Lead was so
crazy
this year. With,
yeah.
Although I would take him over most of the people it's stacked with. Like, I think he's so great.
I would take him over probably half of that field, yeah. I think...
Wait, I'm sorry. I lost the conversation.
Oh, Isaiah Washington.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think probably I'd keep Ejiofor, I'd keep Isaac, and then Washington, and then probably two more of the other four.
Well, rather than hop around, what, do you guys want to go through the list?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. So, should we start with the small and work toward feature?
Yes, we'll give them the attention they don't get.
That's right.
Okay.
It'd be hilarious if we just had that conversation. We're like, let's talk about Best Picture.
And only Best Picture.
Yeah. So,
well, so we can get on to the Hunger Games.
Right. But here's the issue with a lot of these things, and it's also a problem. Even if you see a lot of movies, it's like a lot of these I haven't seen. Truer Than Fiction Award, the nominees are River Changes Course, Let the Fire Burn, and Manakamana.
Yep.
And the only one of those that I have heard a lot about is Manakamana. But I haven't seen any of them.
I can't wait to see Let the Fire Burn, and it was in theaters so briefly, and of course I missed it.
And what's that one about?
So I'm hoping to get a screener. That's the one
about the Moot House in Philadelphia, the sort of all-black house that sort of devised its own spiritual structure and its own sort of was kind of functioning as a sort of little independent state within Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. And it goes badly for 10 years and ends with the mayor authorizing a bombing of a building that kills everybody in it except for two people.
Whoa.
And the whole movie is it's all news footage and interviews from the time. There's no talking heads, there's no captions on screen until I think maybe the end.
It's all like public hearings and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, which are pretty crazy. And the guy who made it is a professor, I think, at George Washington University.
Yeah.
That
was another one of my Tribeca failings that played at Tribeca.
But Nick, you've seen this one though?
I did. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah. I'd seen a half hour kind of version of the same or short documentary on the same subject that was made within Philadelphia, so I had a little bit of context for it. But mm-hmm. It's pretty striking. Manakamana, I almost saw in Toronto and didn't, but
That was my one experimental movie or one weird movie that I saw at New York Film Festival, and I really enjoyed it. I mean, yeah, and it's by the people who made Leviathan. It's very meditative. Mm-hmm. It's literally about people going up a mountain to a temple, and it's a good, like, it's going to put you inside this cable car, literally inside it, going up a mountain, and then you just watch the people inside it mm-hmm. for an hour and a half. And, I haven't seen Leviathan, so this was kind of a new headspace for watching a documentary for me, but I enjoyed it greatly, especially. It's a good movie to catch at a festival if you can, because you're running around to a bunch of other stuff with heavy duty narratives, and it's like, aha, yeah. Let us just sit and contemplate mountains mm-hmm. for an hour. And I know nothing about A River Changes Course.
Me either.
Me neither.
Okay.
But now we'll look it up.
Absolutely.
An annual Someone to Watch award. We have the films that were mentioned here, My Sister's Quinceanera by Aaron Douglas Johnston, Newlyweeds by Shaka King, and The Foxy Merkins by Madeline Olnick.
I cannot wait to see something called The Foxy
Merkins. I know! The title alone.
Holy shit, yeah, seriously. Merkins and Shaka King go to a quinceanera, it would be like my ideal situation.
Now, Merkins means what I think it means, right?
I believe it does.
Yes.
I don't know what it means.
It's a pubic wig.
RuPaul and somebody asked him on Twitter, yes, a couple days ago, like, how many wigs do you own? And he goes, including Merkins?
I'm with you now.
You got us.
Thank God
the Foxy Merkins does sound like a band name, right? Like,
it does. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I'm hoping it's about like some sort of alt-girl group or something.
Mm-hmm. The Robert Altman Award, which is an ensemble prize. I've always enjoyed this award because I think it's smart that it goes to not just the cast, but the casting director and the director.
Yeah.
Which I think just makes it a full picture of how you get a great ensemble. It went to Mud this year. They don't ever have nominees, just the winner.
Right. This is a movie that has continually sort of missed me. I've seen it, but I mean the acclaim for it.
I thought you were going to say it was your upstream color boogeyman, like it attacks again.
It kind of is my, though, because I feel like every time I hear something about, like, For Your Consideration, like, the Oscar movie that Oscar people aren't talking about, and it's just like, let's talk about Mud, and it's like, why this one? Yeah. And it was, like, 99% on Rotten Tomatoes, and I was just, I think it's fine. Mm-hmm. I think it's okay. I think it's a adolescent boy fantasy movie, and that's fine, whatever, they deserve their movies. But, like...
they don't have enough, really.
I don't get what's so superlative about Mud, and I haven't.
I definitely don't either.
Yeah, I don't either, and I would, I like to Take Shelter so much. I feel like kind of this residual Take Shelter love being like, yes, just let Mud have everything. But I agree with you, Joe, that it's not what everyone tries to be trying to make it.
I just think, like, I liked it, I think, a lot more than any of you from conversations we've had. But I think that's kind of a baffling decision for an ensemble prize.
Especially with Frances Ha around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I'm not just sucking up to you, Frances Ha disciples. I mean, for a movie that thrives on having 20 people, most of whose names you don't know, all being great.
Yeah.
The movie wouldn't work if even a few of them were clunkers. Mm-hmm.
And especially since Frances Ha, for being a Best Feature nominee, got... basically nothing else. Got an editing nomination, that was it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This might have been a nice other place to just be like, hey, here's why we liked it so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The best international film, A Touch of Sin from China, Blue is the Warmest Color from France, Gloria from Chile, The Great Beauty from Italy, and The Hunt from Denmark. I'm crazy about Gloria. I don't know if any of you have seen it.
I haven't yet, but I have
just
to.
Love
I
it.
Like I have to.
Oh, I just
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
And of course, Blue's Warmest Color we've discussed. You can listen on an earlier podcast. But have any of you seen the others? A Touch of Sin, The Great Beauty?
I've seen A Touch of Sin just last week, and I really liked it a lot. I've seen A Touch of Sin, Blue's Warmest Color, and The Hunt, and A Touch of Sin is my easy choice of those three.
Mm-hmm. I feel like
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
It's kind of... I think I... called it an Amores Perros kind of in China, but it's more of a daisy chain than that. There's like sort of 7 or 8 stories that are all kind of pulpy or noir inflected in some way that just keep kind of changing hands from one character to the next in contemporary China by a guy who kind of made his name on semi-documentary, semi-fiction movies, and this is definitely his most kind of shaped all-fiction film and a little more violent than he usually gets, but pretty interesting.
And which of these are eligible for the Oscar for it?
That would be The Hunt, The Great Beauty, and Gloria.
Foreign category expert, you are, which ones do you think have a good shot?
I think actually all three of those have a great shot.
Yeah, I do too.
Because they're all, you know, fairly popular. I know The Hunt has some very vocal detractors, but other people are wild for it. Gloria, I am absolutely suspecting it to be nominated, because it's just,
yeah.
It's so fun, but it's serious enough that it has weight as well.
Chile's so hot right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the lead performance is just, she's just great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is the plot?
It's about a woman who, older middle age, and she's like, you know, trying to find new romance and trying to, now that her kids have left, she's trying to like, you know, have a life of her own.
Catnip for this crew.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just, but it's like, it sounds simple, but it's like, you know, she deals with like problematic neighbors and like a guy who she's not sure she can trust, who she's dating, but who she really likes, and then her children's reaction to the people she's dating.
Yeah,
and it's just it has a lot of texture and a lot of humor, and it's just really good. Best documentary, 20 Feet from Stardom. After Tiller, Gideon's Army, The Act of Killing, and The Square.
Well, if I remember correctly, 20 Feet from Stardom is the movie that Joe hates.
Yes, I obviously. I have not at all been talking it up to every person I've talked to for the entire year.
And that's what the one we assume will obviously be an Oscar nominee.
Feet from Stardom.
Or will obviously be the headliner in the, like, why didn't they nominate? Like, I think it could go either way.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be The Act of Killing, where that's going to be sort of left out, and people are going to be like, what, you know. Although, wait, is documentary one of the ones that has the blue ribbon panel or whatever that That puts things back in when they've been left out.
The truth is, the documentary category changes the rules every year. They really do.
They do. Yeah.
Even more so than the foreign film category.
I don't think they have a blue ribbon panel that can kind of reinstate things Dogtooth style, but they do have that long list that comes out.
Right.
That sort of
it's coming out Monday, isn't it?
Or is that right?
I think so.
This is about the time of year that it'll come out. It's been such a strong year for documentaries. I'm kind of fascinated to see what ends up sort of rising to the top. Because I could see...
Much to catch up on. Like I feel like I've done better. I've seen four out of these... Or I've seen three out of these five, and I've at least heard of most of them. But I just feel like there's still so many left.
I really wish always that the timing would be slightly different on these less discussed prizes, like documentary and foreign film. Because even for critics, like you get like the documentary list was 151 titles long.
Yeah,
for Oscar. But just as you're like getting acquainted with, you know, just as you're starting to get acquainted and you're seeking out screeners or whatever, and you're noticing, oh, I have the screener for this one, then they'll immediately eliminate like 140 of them or whatever.
Yeah.
Right.
And the same thing happens with foreign film. I've just started receiving the screeners for the long list. And then any day now, I'm sure they'll release. Oh, now it's down to 10.
Yeah,
it's such a tough balance to strike though, because it's like it's, you know, there's not that natural culling process that happens throughout the year with regular features, where it's sort of like, well, I know that this is something I need to pay attention to, and this isn't. And documentaries, it's they don't get the mainstream attention that everything else does, so you don't want to narrow things off too early. But then, like having too wide of a field just sort of makes people give up, I feel like, sometimes.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing with foreign film, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Well, like, I've got screeners of The Unknown Known and Inequality for All, and, like, both of them are, you know, talking head documentaries about white men who know things. I just can't figure out where to start. Like, I don't even know which one's supposed to be better. It's such a loss. I guess
The Unknown Known isn't great. I wanted to like it, and... It's so reminiscent of Fog of War, and it's so obviously inferior to it that it's impossible not to think of the Fog of War as you're watching Unknown Note. And it's just, it falls short in basically every respect.
Okay, best editing, we have Upstream Color, Museum Hours, Francis Ha, Una Noche, and Short Term 12. I think that's a pretty smart list.
Una Noche is the one that is I had not really heard much about, so I'm going to have to go seek that one out.
I have only heard good things about that one, actually.
Me too, but I don't know much about it. Yeah. And Museum Hours was just here for a year, it was just here for a year, everybody. For a week. And I know it's Amir Sultani's favorite movie of the year so far, but I just couldn't get there in time.
He's not the only one to have heard many people. Your friend Lynn is crazy about it too.
Oh, okay.
Because when she guest blogged for the site, she went on and on about that movie.
I think I like Francis Ha and Upstream Color both a lot for this particular prize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think ultimately for all of my problems with Upstream Color, it flows in that sort of dreamlike way that I think it intends to. I feel like the editing sort of does what Carruth needs it to very well.
Mm-hmm. Best cinematography, 12 Years a Slave, Spring Breakers, Inside Llewyn Davis, All is Lost, and Computer Chess.
That's a really strong... I need to see Computer Chess still. I have not seen that. But everything else... These are gorgeous-looking movies.
We need to have a moment of silence for Nick and Bradford Young being missing, though, right?
Oh, no, man.
Brad, are you okay? Brad says he's fine.
That is kind of... I mean, I wonder if he just split his own vote because he had too many beautiful movies. Although, I don't think Ain't Them Body Saints...
Mother of George and...
Ain't Them Body Saints. Did he have one other?
Although, putting salt in that wound is that in this category, they do sometimes nominate cinematographers for multiple... Like, give them one nomination for bodies of work from the year.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know... It's hard out here for a genius.
I hope he has something that breaks out big time coming up. Like, you know, nothing that he's made has gotten quite as big as it needs to, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's sort of like one step behind Sean Bobbitt, and I feel like Sean Bobbitt's having his breakout this year, so there's hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think have...
Sorry. The computer chess nomination I feel a little weird about, because I think that the decision, I think it'd be sort of like nominating No. Like, I think the concept about how they shot it was so
interesting.
But I don't actually think, I mean, it, maybe even unlike No, which I think is pretty inventive in how it frames and does specific things for specific scenes. Like, I actually thought it, we were just talking about this a little bit on Twitter, but the computer chess kind of suffers a bit from not having a kind of better game plan within that aesthetic that it comes up with for itself. And I know it wants to be kind of impenetrable and, you know, I get it, but there are clear moments in that script that want to pay off related to character or story that just kind of don't, because you haven't really gotten close enough to anybody or followed the plot closely enough to, and
is it filmed on beta? Like, No? What's the, what's the aesthetic?
It's filmed on like a 1979, I'm not going to get the name of the camera right, but it's like a 30-year-old black and white camcorder.
Mm. Oh, wow.
It looks like you're watching security footage the whole time.
Oh, wow. The Bling Ring somehow not eligible, or was it just completely shut out?
I couldn't answer that question. I assume shut out.
I can't imagine what would have made it ineligible. I can't imagine that.
No, I'm sure it was, it would probably just be shut out.
That's a bummer, because I that could have shown up in quite a few categories as far as I'm concerned.
Bling Ring is going to be one of these movies where people are going to, you know, complain about later that people didn't love it enough at the time.
Sofia Coppola, she wears that well. I think fine. She's going to make some huge Oscar movie.
I'm still going to be telling people about Somewhere in about 20 years, and still nobody's going to be like, really, that one?
So I have to say, of this list, the one that I had a couple issues with is actually Inside Llewyn Davis. Now, I think the Coen Brothers movies, they always look great, of course. They always look great, and they always especially sound great. I just don't... It feels really processed to me, like, after the fact. Like, the colors and stuff, I don't know if anybody else reacted that way.
Well, he is the Amelie guy. I do believe he enjoys a digital intermediate.
Yeah.
Sort of a washed out quality to it that I liked, that I sort of responded to, but I see what you mean.
I didn't think about the digital process of it. I that washed out quality to me, it kind of looked like what winter in New York feels like. There was a really nice emotional component to the look of it, especially when you've got that orange cat up against, you know, these landscapes. It was such a beautiful contrast that I mean that digital processing is part of the cinematography, you know, not as pure as capturing a camera, but I really appreciated the look that they went for with that.
I think I agree with all of you. This will be a bit back to me being Oprah. I agree with everybody. you're all special
wonderful flowers.
But like, it does seem like kind of on the independent spirit bracket, a kind of version of the gravity question of this is part of cinematography or it's not, or I really like the look also, but is that really Bruno Del Bonel figuring things out while he's on set? But maybe that's not what cinematography is anymore. I know Nathaniel has no feelings on this subject.
None whatsoever. supporting male. Michael Fassbender, 12 Years a Slave. Will Forte, Nebraska. So supporting. James Gandolfini, Enough Said. Jared Leto for... Oh, it is pronounced Leto, by the way. Dallas Buyers.
Word, okay.
Dallas Buyers Club and Keith Stanfield in Short Term 12.
So is Gandolfini running supporting? Because I thought I saw him listed as lead in that Gurus of Gold thing.
I believe he's running supporting, but that said, I fully expect that at Golden Globes it'll be a lead comedy.
That's interesting.
You don't think they'll stick supporting?
Because the Golden Globes rarely... Are much less rarely than Oscars buy into that because they have two lead categories.
Yeah.
So like you'll see things like the Catherine Zeta-Jones thing winning lead and you know, that sort of thing.
I'm sure Catherine Zeta-Jones would remind you she did not win lead.
Oh, she did. She didn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Renee won that.
Jesus. I thought Renee won SAG, but Catherine
from her table. She just looked like, yeah, I want to kill you.
Wow, I remembered that incorrectly.
It's worth a YouTube.
Based
Boy, that made me mad.
Do you think this Gandolfini thing is going to turn into an attempt at an actual Oscar campaign? Because people have been kind of talking about that being possible, but then saying it's not going to happen. Do you think this... I would say this doesn't really mean anything in terms of actual Oscars, but are people going to try it? try to make it mean something.
I think it means something, yeah.
Yeah?
I think it's indicative of a campaign that's being very, that really has some oomph behind it, yeah.
I mean, just the fact that he's there and not Julia, I think shows, and this is, you know, no disrespect to him because I think he's great in the movie, but it's her movie. She carries the whole thing. Yeah. It just shows that in addition to people liking the performance, there's sentiment behind that notion. Because why isn't she there, you know?
Well, I think her category was a lot more competitive. But yeah.
But Nathaniel, you're always the one who is emphasizing how rare posthumous Oscar nominations are.
That's true. That's true. I'm not saying he's going to get nominated. I just think there is momentum behind that campaign.
Okay. And it's a pretty soft category, I think, at the Oscars, too. I think we still kind of have Fassbender and Leto and three very gettable slots after that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I really hope he gets nominated, because I think even if it weren't a soft category, he would be a
threat. Oh, totally.
Just, yeah. I mean, I don't. Yeah. I'm not saying you're saying that. I just think that he's really, really, really special in it.
Mm-hmm. How do we feel about the rest of the category?
I was very happy for Keith Stanfield.
Yeah.
I really liked that performance a lot. And I think I was glad to see Short Term recognized in the acting categories beyond just Brie Larson, justified as she is, too. He was the kind of the nomination that I was kind of hoping for as a flyer, and he got it, which was great. Forte, I the problems that everybody else has with this, I think, are justified. It's a lead. He's not... I don't think he's bad. I don't think he's given really a whole lot of room to be that good. Mm-hmm. That character is very limited in terms of the way it's written, and he's just sort of reacting to other people. And I get the idea of being sort of the strong, like, spine that allows Bruce Dern and June Squibb to sort of go off, but I don't know if that's necessarily nomination-worthy.
Well, I think that reactive is... underrepresented in awards, though.
Okay.
I'm not sure that, like, one of, like, a really classy nomination, I think, back in the day, Catherine Keener for Capote.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah?
And that's a very, like, she doesn't do a lot in that movie, but she's very good in it, I think.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm not saying Will Forte is that good, but I do think that's a better performance than the character, you know, suggest that it could be.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
But it's also not a supporting performance, so it's a supportive performance.
Yeah. But I'm okay with the category fraud for that, just because I like the attention that he's getting, and like Joe's been saying, that category is weird, has a lot of gettable slots. So I would, I mean, as much as I get annoyed by category fraud, I kind of agree that it's a good supportive performance that I feel okay sneaking into supporting.
Who do you guys vote for in this category? I don't feel like I know that. I'm a
strong
Gandolfini
voter.
Yeah.
And you're a strong who voter?
Gandolfini.
I mean, I don't know. I'm still deciding on some of these.
Are you preserving film bitch mystique?
Well, actually...
violating protocol?
Actually, no. I'm just saying that between these, like, all of... Like, four of those people would... are totally people I'm thinking about for my nominations, but I haven't decided.
Oh, wow.
Like it's crossover. It's a great category. But I'm still debating whether I think Gandolfini is a lead or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I would probably still go Fassbender. I walked out of that movie so blown away by him, and I haven't revisited it yet. I think I owe it that, but he really knocked me away in that role.
I feel like I think about him the least when I think about that movie, interestingly enough. I don't quite know what... I think it's a good performance, but it never really, like, stands out to me the way that Gandolfini does, or... Mm-hmm.
Well...
And Leto... I don't know. I keep going back and forth on whether I liked Jared Leto and Dallas Buyers Club or not.
I think 12 years, like what you're saying about not thinking of Fassbender as much, I think it's like that movie is a classic case of why you need an ensemble award.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Because like the quadrangle that sort of anchors that movie with Paulson, Nyong'o, Fassbender, and Ejiofor, like the way that they all four work together and all the different
yeah.
formations of that quartet, and like the way, like I just think it, as a quartet, it's just stellar.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I'll pour a little out for Michael Zagan, whatever, and Francis Ha, the guy who played Benji and Francis Ha. I thought he was so good. And Ben Foster, honestly, in Ain't Them Bloody Saints, who I thought was great, and in a movie that I didn't quite love, but I thought he was really great, and I kind of bummed that that didn't happen either.
I would agree with that, although I tried to love Ain't Them Bloody Saints a couple times and couldn't get away with it. So I wonder if they just did the same thing, and they're just like, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Very
good
well,
effort,
maybe.
But can't quite sign off.
Yeah.
Supporting female, Melanie Diaz, Fruitvale Station, Sally Hawkins, Blue Jasmine, Lupita Nyong'o, 12 Years a Slave, Yolanda Ross, Gopher Sisters, and June Squibb, Nebraska.
As I said before, I was super excited for Melanie Diaz, and I think between her and Lupita Nyong'o, that's the class of the category for me, having not seen Yolanda Ross.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of abstractly excited for Melanie Diaz and Yolanda Ross, just because I think both of them have been real troopers for like going on 10 years now, and it's nice to see them get nominated for something, but it's I do think this category is like significant notch below the other acting races, which is probably going to happen again at Oscar time.
Yeah,
that's an Oscar race I have no idea where it's going, and I'm kind of excited for what that might mean in terms of like a left field campaign. I just don't know who it would be for.
I think that category is starting to firm up.
You think so?
Like Winfrey, Nyong'o, and Lawrence are in. I think it's just
Julia.
It's just the
probably.
I think it's just the other two that are sort of wide open to several people's campaigns. Yeah.
I've been waiting for the Sally Hawkins campaign to start up. It's kind of weird to me that she hasn't been talked about that much, given that Cate Blanchett is seen as this guarantee. And I thought Sally Hawkins was really good.
I could see her showing up at the Globes. I could definitely see her showing up at the Globes. They liked her enough to give her the win for Happy Go Lucky.
Best male lead, Bruce Dern, Nebraska, Chiwetel Ejiofor, 12 Years, Oscar Isaac, Llewyn Davis, Michael B. Jordan, Fruitvale Station, McConaughey, Dallas Buyers Club, and Robert Redford in All Is Lost. Now, interestingly enough, other than Leo DiCaprio, those are the six men that seem to be in the running for the Best Actor
and
nomination.
And Tom Hanks and Captain Phillips.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I feel like everybody assumes they'll swap out Oscar Isaac for Tom Hanks, and those are the six contenders.
I guess the only regret is that there's no out like left field ones, but there's not really room for it, as we keep discussing about how crowded this category is. And I like Oscar Isaac so much, and I like Michael B. Jordan. I'm glad to see them get in there. I don't know who I think will win.
I think this is where I miss the sort of indies of yore, where like, you know, when John Cusack was the only person nominated for being John Malkovich, but it seemed like the independent spirit voters kind of went out of their way to go for people. I mean, we talked before about which movies qualify and not, but even when you look at the list of qualifying movies, I feel like they used to try to throw some things to people who aren't getting as much attention. Even with a like sure to be Oscar'd co-star. So like this would have been a nice time to see like the Martin Bonner guy or somebody get a citation that none of these people quite need to keep their, well, whatever.
Keep their name in the ring,
Yeah, exactly.
Or Paul Ian Horn, yeah. Okay, so best female lead, Cate Blanchett, Blue Jasmine, Julie Delpy, Before Midnight, Gabby Hoffman, Crystal Ferry, Brie Larson, Short Term 12, and Shailene Woodley, The Spectacular Now.
Shailene!
Where the F is Greta Gerwig is all I could think of when they announced that category.
Yeah, that is bizarre. I kind of keep looking and being like, no, I overlooked her name, right? She's in there. And,
right.
Yeah, I can't figure that out. But I really like the rest of the category a lot.
Well, and again, it's just so you look at that best feature nomination for Frances Ha, and it's just like, okay, well, if you liked the movie so much, the component parts about that movie that really stand out are her performance and the script that she and Baumbach did together. It is a strong category. I would lop off Julia Delpy for Greta Gerwig in a heartbeat, but I like everybody. I think everybody's really good. And that Gabby Hoffman nomination, I wouldn't have made it, but I love how it's really an exciting sort of addition to the nomination list. It brings Crystal Ferry to people's attention, and that's a movie that people should see. I think it's a very strong group.
Okay. Okay. Best first screenplay, In a World, Don John, Nebraska, Afternoon Delight, The Inevitable Defeat of Mr. and Pete.
I haven't seen Inevitable Defeat. Have any of you guys?
I saw
No,
it.
No, I haven't.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
What did you think?
I didn't love it. And the scenes were like really unevenly effective, I thought, but there's a kind of you can't think of it as a twist movie exactly, but the way the last two scenes play out kind of force a reevaluation of kind of everything beforehand. So as a screenwriting coup, that was pretty impressive. And I, right after I tweeted my my C grade response to that movie, the screenwriter tweeted back and like started this whole conversation about his own movie and was completely great.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Interesting to talk to. So good. I feel like a personal soft spot for him. But yeah, I've only seen three of these. Yeah. And I haven't seen In a World, which I keep hearing is a really, really.
I watched it last night. Screenplay.
I really liked In a World. I was really glad to see that get nominated here. Of these five, I've seen In a World, Don John, and Nebraska, and that's clearly my favorite of the three of those screenplay-wise.
I liked In a World. I just saw it last night, so it's very fresh in the memory. And I do think that in terms, it works better as a screenplay than anything else. Like, they're, like I don't think it quite pulls it off in terms of filmmaking. But it is, it, the conceit is really funny, and, you know, she does a lot of fun things with the whole milieu of it, of the sound, the voiceover artists, and all that.
Yeah. And I thought Michaela Watkins was fantastic in it, and I was sort of hoping there might have been a shot at her showing up and supporting in this these nominations.
She's always so good.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's been killing it all over the place lately.
She has. She's been having quite the last couple, 2-3 years.
She just needs Meryl Streep to win something and go, my God, give her a movie!
Best first feature, Blue Caprice, Concussion, Fruitvale Station, Una Noche, and Wadidjida. I don't know how to pronounce that. Wadidjida?
So I'm confused now. Is that in English or not? Because that's a foreign language film competitor, right? And people are seeing it as a front runner. But
It is.
But non-English language movies are supposed to be...
Right,
from these other categories.
Yeah, that was confusing to me too.
Well, Una Noche is not in English either. Actually, I should double check before.
I feel like the Spirits do, where they're just sort of like, these are our rules, except for this year.
And yeah,
nobody talk about it.
They have been known to do that.
Well, I think Blue Caprice is significantly better than Fruitvale Station, but those are the only two that I've seen.
Yeah, I want to see Concussion. Same here, actually. I do love Robin Wygert, so. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would say as a producer's award, these are five really difficult movies to raise money for and get out to the marketplace and have people learn about. So from that standpoint of just achieving something, I think all five of these groups are...
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive. Mm-hmm. And it's fun seeing Rose Trochet in here.
Yeah.
Let's go fish.
I know, I haven't seen her name in a while. Best screenplay, Blue Jasmine, Woody Allen, Before Midnight, Enough Said, Nicole Holofcener, The Spectacular Now, and 12 Years a Slave. That's a strong list.
I'm trying to figure out if I think that the screenplay is the strength of 12 Years a Slave, and if not thinking that is to discount it, just because I think the direction is so striking. And I have a copy of it that Searchlight sent me, and I've been noticing a lot of the differences and stuff that Steve McQueen brought to it. But I guess I don't want to diminish that movie's accomplishment by saying I don't think the screenplay was good, because obviously you can't have that film without a good screenplay. But I do think some of these others are more accomplishments of writing, like Before Midnight or Enough Said. Mm-hmm.
And 12 Years a Slave is going to end up winning because it's going to be the most high-profile Oscar contender.
Juggernaut-y.
Yeah.
Although they don't always bow to that.
Have been increasingly,
I don't know if it was always this way, but I feel like since... I mean, could you always vote on them? Because now anybody can vote, which is why the mainstream stuff wins.
Anybody can vote?
Like, you just have to join their organization and you can vote.
Wait, what?
The voting's open to the public.
For all of the awards?
We're all signing up for Film Independent.
As far as I know, that's why it's been so, like, the Oscar nominees win all the time.
We can fix this the way that we haven't been able to fix the Critics' Choice Awards, Nathaniel. Let's do this.
This voting block of four is going to change.
Yeah, Katie.
Change everything.
Katie, somehow I don't think if we've been able to change a group of 200 that we're going to be able to change.
Is that all the Critics' Choice is? Is 200 people?
It's like 275, something like that.
Yeah.
That is, okay, you know what? All right, I'm going to formulate
And some of them are bots, so it's really only like 30 people.
Best Director, Shane Carruth, Upstream Color, J.C. Chandor, All Is Lost, Steve McQueen, 12 Years a Slave, Jeff Nichols, Mud, and Alexander Payne, Nebraska.
And Sofia Coppola for The Bling Ring.
Joe's write-in vote.
In my mind. I'm so glad that J.C. Chandor got nominated. I'm okay on All Is Lost as a Redford vehicle. I'm really, really enthusiastic about it as a directing vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like the Shane Carruth nomination in that they have their favorites that are not mainstream favorites. Jeff Nichols, the same thing, too, because he was nominated for Take Shelter. I like that there's an identity to the spirits that is independent of the mainstream. Whereas, they love
Alexander Payne.
Yeah, thanks. Like, they love Alexander Payne, too, but a lot of people do.
Especially me.
So, you okay? Are you recovering? Is everything all right?
Nick, I bow to no one in my love for Alexander Payne.
Yeah, the dirty secret is that he still hasn't returned that photo you sent him to be autographed. That's why you're in hate with him.
Well, I'm just saying, I obviously have already joined this organization, as you can see from all the Nebraska nominations.
No, I didn't mean to imply earlier, if in case anybody was confused, that it's open to the public for nominations. It's just the winners.
Okay.
Oh. All right, Shailene people, let's do this. Now.
And if I'm wrong, I'm sure 100 people will correct me. But I'm pretty sure you can just join and pay like whatever the fee is, like $50 a year or whatever, and vote on the awards.
I was somehow strangely convinced that they were going to shock everybody, and Harmony Korine was going to show up.
It's actually Harmony Leto.
thank you, sir.
Well, it is a little disheartening, I think, to not see more attention for that movie, considering...
Yeah, it's not my favorite thing, but I don't really begrudge it any attention, I guess.
I saw it again.
Except for the James Franco stuff, because he got enough attention for that. No, it's not
I really
people.
Don't think he did.
Really? Ooh. Oh, God. I couldn't hear the end of James Franco and Spring Breakers when that movie came out.
Well, when it came out, but, like, that's true of, like, a lot of movies. They get their MVP. Like, he's got, like, what has he won for it or been nominated for it? It seems like nothing.
I think he comes close to ruining the movie a few times. So I'm super glad to see him not get pushed as the MVP, because I almost think he's the ball and chain a few times. Like, let me just turn this into a movie about me. Like, okay.
Wow, I could have sworn. I guess I'm remembering this wrong. I could have sworn on your 50 at 50 that you were praising him.
I did put him in the list because it had seemed like such a weak category, and he does like make quite an impression, but I think I even wrote something like, I can't wait to take him off this list, or like he does something kind of interesting, but the movie just gives itself over to him like way, 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 way too much. So I'm glad he's not here.
Wow. Okay.
But also Megan Ellison also doesn't like this movie, right? Like, she kind of demoted herself from producer to like associate producer, and like didn't.
Oh, is
like,
that true?
Not a movie that Annapurna is really psyched about. I mean, they're not going to push it like they are her, for example.
You're like our Megan Ellison expert.
Well, she and Brad are over here having brunch while I talk to you guys. Brad and I have a different person over for brunch, usually on Sundays. but anyway, yeah. When the movie came out, I think that scuttlebutt leaked somehow.
I heartily disagree with all of you. I think James Franco's spectacular in it. Exactly what the movie needs.
But is it exactly what it needs for like the 30 minutes that he's on screen improvising in the same way? Look at my shit.
Is it the movie kind of all about 30 minutes of things that exhaust you?
Yes.
What I liked about him is that I felt really worn out by what was going on in the movie by these girls. And then he showed up and I was like, oh, we're going to do something different now.
Yeah, I think it has it has three very clear times where it's all about that thing until you're exhausted by it.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's the beginning, it's like the girls, and then it's him, and then it's like all the, when everything goes crazy with the cinematography.
I think it's about the cinematography and Britney Spears the entire time, and I never get tired of one of them.
I accidentally clicked away from my list of Spirit nominees.
Oh, for the feature?
We're up to feature now.
I think we're just down to best feature.
Yeah, and we've spent an hour discussing Spirit nominees.
Does this mean I'm off the hook for having to see Philomena?
All is lost, Frances Ha, Inside Llewyn Davis, and Nebraska.
Frances Ha!
Woo-hoo. Yeah, honestly, like, God, finally.
Yeah, I do not know what's going on with that movie, because, like, the Gothams, which are tomorrow, also ignored
it. It comes so
soon. Yeah.
It's interesting. Now that it's streaming on Netflix Instant, I feel like more people are talking about it again, and I wonder if that kind of release pattern for indies will end up being a good thing, where you can not only just sort of like release something on DVD, but like release it as streaming and get that much more attention for it. And obviously it's not like, you know, the people who are watching it on Netflix streaming are all awards voters, but I think...
Well, having an ass-kicking Criterion version come out at the same time can't hurt either.
True. Very true. Exactly. Yeah. So...
You guys, I bought that from Criterion and it didn't arrive. I'm confused.
Boo! God damn it, Criterion. Get on the case.
I know.
Well, that and City Lights are currently their top-selling discs, so they may just be running out, but...
Yeah.
Nice. I know that too from my brunch. My brunch is awesome, you guys. I know everything.
I know they're selling it behind the counter at IFC Center. Next time I go there, like the last two times I was there, I sort of resisted because I didn't quite have the money in my pocket that I thought I did. But I'm sure I will next time I'm there.
It's half price in the Barnes & Noble site until tomorrow, so that's how you want to get it.
Yeah, for real.
Possibly also on Amazon. I think I might be the Frances Ha voter who's represented in these lists, because I don't love it the way that you guys do. And what I love about it, it's hard to tie to any one component of it, I think.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a kind of atmospheric winner over. But I'm not... I don't love Gerwig in it as much as I've loved her before, even though I really like her. And I'm not sure that any one performance or one technical part of it... Like, I can totally see putting it on my own list of features for this crowd, but almost nowhere else.
Interesting.
Even though it's one of my favorites in that list.
And this is when Nick reveals that he did join the Spirit.
That's true, voted. Nick is the Spirit from that movie that nobody saw.
That's
what that movie was about, right? It was about an Independent Spirit Awards voter who...
my independence and my spirit, yep.
Rights wrongs.
Okay.
Okay!
Sorry. I'm so worn out on this topic. And
I guess, done. We're all done with Independent Spirit Awards.
But can, like I say...
See you in Santa Monica.
Here's what bugs me about the Spirit Awards. Why did the nominations come out so early when it's the second to last show?
I know. I kind of love that, though. I love that they're so early because at least it gets people talking about certain things into the season. And I love that they're so late because they are the perfect salve at the end of a long campaign of the same people. And this year it's going to be a little slightly less than that because these are also the same people. But it's a different vibe. I love that they come so late and so early. I don't know. It really makes the whole half the year seem like Independent Spirit season.
I always feel, maybe because I get exhausted by the end of the season, I'm always like, really? Thought we were done with this one.
They always put on such a good show, though. I feel like that's always at least an entertaining show, even as we've gotten past the years where John Waters hosted, and of course those were fantastic. I don't know. I feel like they put on a very entertaining and a show that knows that we're all kind of exhausted by this whole thing, both. Watching on television and in the room, and I think they make an effort to be a lot looser and less serious about things, which I like.
I sometimes feel maybe it's because as the years have gone on, I've found them encroaching more and more toward mainstream nominations, that I kind of feel like their sort of edge is really forced and fake.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm just like the sort of edge that they have in the tent and on the award show. It's like, really, but it's the same people. So why are you pretending that you're so edgy?
I don't know if it's so much edgy.
Because they're allowed
edgy.
To be drunk on stage.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
That's... And they're allowed to eat during, so they're happy.
So it's like, yeah, the Golden Globes.
Like, it's less edgy and
it's like
more
the Golden Globes.
Loose. Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, like, that Mickey Rourke acceptance speech, like, they get 10 years of positive karma from me just for that.
Yeah.
YouTube it.
Yeah, and Ally Sheedy for High Art.
Which you can't YouTube. I tried the other day.
That was awesome.
I try almost every day.
That was just awesome. Okay. So we're way over time. So happy, okay. happy spirit watching, which means please try and seek some of these movies out so that when it rolls around, you won't be exhausted like I am.
Yeah.
And that you can be even more invested in the outcome.